The kingdom consisted of four towers, each with 21 floors, each connected to the others by closed-off landings, whose glass doors could be opened only with the security key each tenant possessed. They were thus entirely private. The first and second floors of the building, however, were public spaces. On the lower of these two floors was a replica of a French formal garden, with shrubberies dying in the heat and two-story villas around it, a grander form of lodging offered by the kingdom. The patios were filled with Chinese lions and plaster Germanic milkmaids with wide-brimmed bonnets pinned onto walls of plastic ivy. A flight of steps connected the decaying garden with a large pool on the floor above it, itself surrounded by trellises of untamed foliage and Chinese box trees with their aroma of crushed almonds, looking out over abandoned tobacco warehouses. This kind of building had once been fashionable. It was a long-outmoded idea of luxurious living, built in the heady days of the early 90s, the Asian boom that had come and gone and come back again. Now, bankrupt tycoons had built European-style fantasies up and down the street, with turrets, portcullises, and topiary, but they had faded and peeled in a heat that didn't suit them. The little canals, the klongs, which once gave the illusion of lordly moats, had filled with toxins and monitor lizards. In the elevator, Sarah found herself reflected in a full-length mirror. She glanced up at the security camera in the corner, knowing that the men at reception were watching her at all times. And as she did, the camera's eye seemed to blink. On the fourth floor, a middle-aged woman dressed in a housecoat and slippers got in with her Pomeranian, and in an instant, the elevator was claustrophobic. The woman, unable to speak English, had one hand gripped around a leash studded with glass diamonds. The elevator doors at last opened to the first floor, where Burmese maids were already gathered with their master's own little Pomeranians and toy poodles. There was a sound of carpets being beaten in the surrounding obscurity. Sarah walked past them, climbed the single flight of steps up to the pool, and slipped into the water. The children had not yet arrived with their inflatable dolphins and flamingos, and the maids high up in the windows paused to stare down at the white girl resting in the shallows. How did she appear to them? As she looked back at them that morning, another early morning swimmer made her way toward the pool. A woman of about Sarah's age, 30, more or less, in the black one-piece of a serious amateur lap racer. The newcomer didn't even notice Sarah at first and was under the trellis, throwing aside her towel when she finally did so. She had not yet drawn her goggles down over her eyes when a brief smile came to her lips, and she wished Sarah good morning. She was Thai or Eurasian. It was hard to tell, though there was little that was European about her. Sarah returned the greeting. She then edged away to give herself a little more space. The woman positioned herself carefully, delicately self-conscious, and then sprang into a slick front crawl that propelled her to the far side of the pool in seconds. She did 10 laps before she stopped at the shallow end, whereupon she raised her goggles and looked over at Sarah. "Did I disturb you?" She spoke in British inflected English, the accent regionally indistinct. Instinctively, Sarah decided that she was wholly Thai after all. She had learned her English at a good school. That was all. "Me? No, I'm not really here to swim. I just come to cool off and waste time." The girl slapped the water with both hands, as if obeying her signal. The clouds parted above the surrounding towers, and a shaft of sunlight shot down into the gardens and hit a corner of the pool. It was a different heat from the air's humidity.